Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome everyone to Sports Talk with me, the Godfather, on Trend White Sports Radio Show. You know, you guys always realize I cut the music off pretty quick. That's G-Money's music when he does his shows. Me, I like to come on and just start talking. I'd like to thank my sponsors, Coca-Cola, Snyder Puzzles of Pennsylvania, and all my fans that keep this show going. Look, we're going to concentrate here in Buffalo right now. And Buffalo is, you know, I would say a mess. I mean, look at other teams around the NFL. We're going to talk about the quarterback situation. Let's just cut to the chase. Buffalo has a, you know, season that's, let's say, I don't know. It's a wait-and-see approach to the Bills. You know, they got a new quarterback, Tyrod Taylor, that no one's seen coming in the preseason, and he pretty much removed E.J. Manuel, the number one pick for the Bills, out of the starting role. You got a new coach in Rex Ryan that brings his type of football to Buffalo. People like him. He's a blue-collar guy. He kind of imprinted himself on this team, and yet you see the Bills win some games. The first game against the Colts turned out to be not that big of a game because the Colts aren't looking good right now. But you see them fight hard and come back against Tennessee. The issue is they lost prior to that to the Giants at home, and you don't really want to jump on the bandwagon yet. And I said that the first week. I said, do not take this Colts game to heart because the Colts didn't look good. Here to find out, the Colts aren't a good football team at all. But I did say the Colts always start out slow, but they got bigger problems. It's a long season. And in that season, like we said before, you're going to have some issues. And the issue right now at the Buffalo Bills is Tyrod Taylor is hurt. He's hurt. What do? You sign another quarterback. And now guess who's back in the starting role? E.J. Manuel. For a team that's trying to get up and make it to the playoffs for the first time in 15 years, this is not something that you want to happen. Because all this is going to do is put more pressure on Rex Ryan to justify, if E.J. comes in the game and plays well, to justify sitting him. Now look, in a normal situation, Tom Brady gets hurt. Castle plays well. He gets traded to another team, ends up in Kansas City. Doesn't do much at all. Comes to Buffalo, now he's back in Dallas. Doesn't do much at all. But you have a situation where you have a number one pick, E.J. Manuel, who's on the bench, who pretty much lost his spot. And to avoid a quarterback controversy, Tyrod Taylor just goes out there and looks like a first-round pick himself. But I will tell everyone this. I've been saying this a long time. Only a few guys can come in the league and take off from day one. This is proof that I've been saying a very long time that a quarterback needs to wait 2 to 3 years behind a plausible, decent quarterback so he can learn. A lot of people are surprised what Taylor's doing. I'm not. The guy was behind Flacco. The guy sat. He learned. Because coming out of Virginia Tech, he wasn't this guy at all. But I will tell you this, he's the guy in Buffalo. But now, you have a situation where he's back. And what I mean is E.J. Manuel's back. And so you try to, you know, walk this fine line if you're a coach and say, look, my starter's hurt. The first-round pick, E.J. Manuel, is back in. For a lot of Bills fans hearing the conversations, I'm telling you right now, it's a lot more complicated than that. Because if E.J. comes in and plays well, now Rex Ryan's in a very tough situation. And we all know how Buffalo Bills fans can get. Almost any team in this situation will get. Look, Tyrod has been looking good for only a few weeks. So it's not like he led your team to wins for years. He's pretty much a new guy here. Still proving himself. But you have a guy you spend a lot of money on, the first-round pick, E.J. Manuel, who lost his spot, which no one's seen coming. No one's seen this coming. But he lost his spot. Tyrod's in. He plays well. And it justifies you sitting your number one pick. Some Bills fans didn't like that. Some Bills fans are firmly in the corner of E.J. Manuel. But now, Tyrod is hurt. E.J. Manuel comes back in. Let's say he plays well and leads the team to a victory and looks good doing it. Let's say Tyrod has had to sit out another week. He does it again. How does Rex Ryan even do that to appease the team, to appease his fans, to just appease himself? How does he put Tyrod back in the game? Let's be honest. Tyrod Taylor doesn't have a large body of work. And right now the Bills fans love him. But I can guarantee you, if he went in one of those games and looked horrible, they'd be crying for EJ again. So now all you Bills fans get your chance. If you're an EJ guy, this is your chance. I'm telling you right now, this will not end. What do you do, Bills fans? Tyrod's hurt. EJ leads you to wins and looks good doing it. What do? I say you do this. You name Tyrod your starter. But even I must admit this. When you have a starter that gets hurt and a backup comes in, the starter, when he's healthy, goes back in the game. And if you look at the situation around the NFL, most guys who do that have a larger body of work. Tyrod Taylor doesn't have a larger body of work to justify that if EJ plays well, you put him back in. You don't. And you can't do it. Maybe you can. We're going to bring on the kid, Brian Freeman, on, who has been on the fence. He's a Bills fan, and he's going with the quarterback that's helping his team win. But now, everything we talked about last week, you have to rethink it. And when I put it to you the way I just put it to you, it makes sense. Tyrod doesn't have a lot of work. When a normal starter who's been playing for years in that spot gets hurt, he comes back, he's in. The guy who's the backup is back on the bench. Totally situation here. And the kid, you see this playing out. I see nothing good happening out of this. I see Bills fans going completely nuts, talking crazy. But when you look at it from a football term and look at quarterbacks, kid, who has a body of work. If Peyton Manning goes down, backup comes in, I don't care if it's 3 weeks. Peyton Manning's healthy, he's back in. Tyrod just doesn't have that body of work to almost just automatically assume that he goes back in the game if EJ comes in and plays well. What's your thoughts on this whole situation and things you've been hearing?
Well, first off, thank you for having me back on, but I've been waiting to talk about this forever. My thought is exactly what you were saying, and Tyrod Taylor is not one of those guys who's making the big contract, so if it's going to put a lot of pressure on Rex to keep starting him, because if EJ does perform, then it's not like you're wasting money for Tyrod Taylor, and if you do decide to bench him, which I don't think they will, but if EJ comes out and plays strong against a strong team like the Bengals and then goes to London and plays well against the Jaguars, if he's still playing that week, and then going into the bye week, it's going to be a long 2 weeks for these Bills fans being divided, because you hear it all around. You hear the buzz now, and the EJ people are talking now, and the Tyrod people are defending Tyrod and saying that Tyrod's still their guy, and they give them all the numbers that Tyrod's done, but it's just going to create huge controversy these next 2 weeks if Tyrod can't play.
You know what? It's the controversy, to me, I'm going to be on the fence on here, because I will say this. He doesn't have a body of work to justify him going back in if EJ's playing well. If he was a three-year starter, you went to the playoffs, or he's looked good, then he goes back in. I don't know really where the controversy may be when you really think about it, because he's only been on the field for what, three, four weeks? That's it. So if he's hurt and EJ comes in and you feel that, this is your number one pick, okay, he's finally playing right. As much as I like how he plays, how do you justify putting him back in if EJ plays well? I mean, look, I'm not taking anyone here. I'm just calling it the way I see it. I think of the situation where Tyrod's still earning trust here in Buffalo. Yeah, 4 weeks. Now, you know as well as I do, kid, in Buffalo, that could all be wiped away with one bad game or him losing one meaningful game. The Bills fans be crying for EJ. So now Rex Ryan has a huge problem because you know what? This isn't going away.
Yeah, you look at the example of EJ Manuel last year. After 4 games, he has that one bad pick six to J.J. Watt, and people are calling for Kyle Orton the next week. But I see the not big resume for Tyrod Taylor also working in his favor, because you still don't know what you have in him, and he'd still be that star that he showed you in the first 5 weeks, completing 70% of his passes, going for averaging over 200 yards per play. You've seen his arm, and Rex has constantly used the excuse that he hasn't been at 100%, and I feel like he's going to wait till he's 100% and be like, this is my guy, this is still my guy. It's not like Rex has had EJ before, so This is a little different because Rex came in here and he made the choice of Tyrod being his guy when he got in here. So it's just, it's going to be hard to say that he's going to keep Tyrod on the bench if EJ does perform.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've been hearing people talk on other sports stations and people are just going nuts. People are just taking this way too far. I think it's a very simple solution. The solution is you play EJ. If he plays well, let's be honest, you keep him in. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. You keep him in because, one, the off-the-field stuff is he's your number one pick. You picked him number one. He picked. I mean, that was your first-round pick. He's finally playing well. No one's seen this whole Tyrod thing coming, but he's hurt. EJ comes in and plays well. I just think from a business standpoint, you got to give him another shot. And if he doesn't pan out in a few games, then you justify if you want to get rid of him. But if you keep playing this game with a guy who only has 3 to 4 games under his belt who's looked good to your number one pick, there's a financial burden that's going to be created there. And I think the Bills, if I'm the Bills, I let him play. And maybe I hope he doesn't look well so I could justify if I want to shop him, so I could justify if, I don't know, I put Tyrod back in. He's cheaper right now. Make him play for his contract and earn it. Get what you can. Guess who else does it with other players? The New England Patriots bring guys in dirt cheap. They perform well. And when they hit that high ceiling, unlike the Bills and other teams, the Patriots do it backwards. When they hit that ceiling, they kind of get rid of them and do it all over again, and they're successful at it. But in this situation, I think you're going to see EJ come in. And the way I see it, if he plays well, I think he's staying in. He's not a Rex guy, but I think Rex is going to play him. And no matter how he plays, it's going to justify what the Buffalo Bills do to him in the future. Kid, if you think I'm wrong there, you know, let me know. But I think that's what you do, kind of let him play. If he plays well, it's kind of a catch-22. If he plays well, you get a quarterback controversy. And if he doesn't play well, you could justify trying to shop him end of the year or whatever, or justify putting Tyrod in for what, financial reasons, and also just because he's playing better.
Yeah, but what I'm going to say is, first off, EJ should be the starter this week. It shouldn't be any controversy. I think Rex is hopefully just blowing smoke at the media and creating it harder for the Bengals because they would have to plan for both Tyrod and EJ. So it makes it harder on the Bengals, but I don't see him risking Tyrod's health and not starting EJ because this is exactly why you have EJ as your backup. If you're not going to start EJ, then that wrecks his confidence, and that's just showing everybody around the league that if you want to shop him next year and grab a new backup, that you have no confidence in this guy, which I think is wrongly put on EJ because of his first 2 years or first 3 years or whatever it was. But if EJ does come in and perform and takes over the starting job, I'd be quite shocked because of what I said before and how Rex came in here and proclaimed that Tyrod was his Buffalo Bills quarterback that he's gonna ride with. And he did it with Geno Smith in New York, and I feel like that's just what he's going to do here. And it's awful to say that a guy loses his job because of injury, but it happens in this league like no tomorrow. A player goes down that you thought was your starter, guy comes in, plays extraordinarily well, and there you go, you got your new starter. But I just feel like Rex is one of those thick-headed guys, my pride kind of guys that are going to stick to his guns and keep Tyrod as a starter. But if EJ plays well, I feel like that he should be the starter. And it's going to have to be really well. I'm going to see like a bigger game out of him than best game has been in his young career, 14 starts.
Kid, did you get any updates on what injury he had? I mean, I've been doing my scouting and other things. I didn't catch on what the injury was. Any idea what it
Tyrod?
Might be? Yeah.
Tyrod injury? Yeah, he has a sprained MCL, which is in his knee.
Okay. Well, we're talking sprained MCL. Listen, he uses his legs a little bit to where that could be an injury that could maybe linger 2 weeks. If they really like him, they're probably going to be safe with him. If EJ looks good, they'll probably start him again. Man, this is going to be a mess. But you know, I wouldn't want to be in the front office. But I wouldn't want to be in the front office neither with the San Francisco 49ers, who are talking about Kaepernick and they're worried about his arm mechanics. Like we said before, the running quarterback deal, you pick a guy because he looks good with his legs. Once his legs don't work anymore, and once people catch up to him and learn how to play him because he can't throw, after you paid him all this money, now you're talking about this guy and his quarterback arm mechanics. I think that is the most lamest thing for these scouts. You know that when he's in college. You know that when you make him your big pick, you know. Wasn't really a high pick, but he's your guy. He looked good for 2 years, like I predict any running back, any quarterback. I call them running backs that can throw a little bit because that's all they are. And now you're worried about his arm mechanics. That tells me the scouting should be fired because if the guy can't throw in college and he runs, you know the NFL was full of very smart defensive coordinators who's going to figure out how to stop this guy and stop his feet. We've seen it before. And then you have to be forced to throw and fall back on your mechanics, which you learned way before the NFL. And now Colin Kaepernick, not worried about his arm mechanics, but the 49ers are. Kid, what do you think about this? And you draft these guys, which I think will come to an end very quickly. You draft these guys, they're running quarterbacks, they sell tickets, they fill seats, they're exciting on ESPN. But then when the coordinators figure out how to stop the run and they got to fall back on their arms, I hate hearing about mechanics when they're already at the highest level. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm just going to say that I hate to classify this, but I feel like Tyrod Taylor is the same way here in Buffalo. And it showed last game. I don't think that his arm is the problem. I don't think his arm is the problem. And me and G-Money went over this. Like, his arm is exceptionally well. Like, I think it's up there with the best of them. He can throw it, but he's like RG3. You can throw that beautiful bomb pass, but when it comes down to you're missing throw, if you're missing throws, if you're missing timing, if you're checking it down all the time because you're scared. And now with his knee injury, if you're going to be scared to run, that's probably one of your biggest weapons in your offense that I've seen from him. And if they're going to say beat us by throwing the ball, I don't know if Tyrod has developed that much mentally yet, but he has to prove that to me. I know he has the arm talent, but it's the mentality of him. And he just, and I talked about this with G-Money on Sunday night when we reviewed it, but he it feels like he plays not to lose, and he plays that conservative game when he's one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league right now. And it's really a big shame because I feel like if he were to just start having more confidence that he can start whipping the ball about the place and just picking apart defenses, if he were to just, I don't know if it's his confidence level. I don't think it has to do with his confidence level, but for some reason, it just seems like he's just a nervous wreck back there when he's scrambling around for his life instead of just sitting in the pocket and stepping up and making a throw instead of rolling out and just picking up 2 yards on a scramble.
Yeah. Look, I'll say it, kid. It seems like when a white guy says this, he's a racist. No, he's talking football. Football smarts may not be there because, not because he's a dumb guy and all these running quarterbacks are dumb guys, because all their career from Pop Warner to high school to college, they were asked to use their feet. And now they're at the highest level, and those mechanics were never taught. They were taught how to run. That's why they run so well. But in the NFL, people could stop that. Then you got to fall back on your quarterback mechanics. And maybe he might be like everyone else. And like you said before, and you know, our first show about this whole deal, we both said, look, we don't know how he's going to turn out because right now he's kind of a shock to the defenses. But as the season goes on, you're going to see more schemes, and he's got to think and know where to put the ball. And that's where we're going to find out if he's the guy. Look, someone just emailed me today. Are you talking about Tyrod? Doesn't he remind you of Russell Wilson? No way. Not even close. I mean, relax. He's not Russell Wilson by any stretch. Does he play like him? He looks down the field first? Yes. But Russell Wilson can pick guys apart when he's on, moving and also sitting in the pocket. So this Russell Wilson comparison to Tyrod, please stop, guys, because it's not the first time I heard it. He hasn't played long enough to prove any of that. And for us to think, well, not me, for a lot of guys to think he's a Russell Wilson type guy. Look, I said he plays like him. Maybe he could be like him. But that's even saying a lot. And I want to take that back because Russell Wilson's pretty good. And for people to just throw out there Tyrod after 3 to 4 weeks is looking like Russell Wilson, no, not at all. He doesn't have the smarts yet. And I'm glad you bring that up, kid, because, look, how does he have the smarts yet? Because he hasn't played much. He sat behind Flacco and watched. He came in a little bit more prepared. But as the schemes get tougher, he may not be able to figure it out. So maybe EJ should stay. I mean, it's a tough situation you're in because we're going to find out pretty quickly. Just like you said, with his knee hurt, guess what? Now you can't really move. Now you got to be like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, and those guys and pick apart the defenses and identifying – where the ball needs to go, and that's still yet to be seen with him.
Yeah, he's much different than Russell Wilson. I don't see, he plays so much differently than Russell Wilson. I don't think Russell Wilson has the arm talent that Tyrod does, but I think that he has the defensive football IQ that is much higher than Tyrod's for right now. And I'm not saying that, oh, Tyrod will never get to that point, but like you just said, he's played in five games. He's not at that level. And it showed last week. He went up against a future Hall of Fame defensive coordinator, Dick LeBeau, and he looked confused out there. Now, people will say, oh, his defensive, the Dick LeBeau's defensive line was all up in his face and Tyrod had no time. But when I was watching the game, I feel like where is the adjustment or where is his play calling and audibling where he gets a hot route out and throws a 5-yard pass that can maybe be turned into a 15-yard gain because of knowing where the blitz is coming from, knowing where the pressure is coming from, instead of rolling out and trying to make something crazy happen, instead of just making the smart football play and throwing to a hot route and checking down from knowing what a defense is giving you. And Russell Wilson has continued to succeed because he's capable of doing that. And I think that Tyrod can sometime learn that, but it showed last week that he still is a far way to go until he figures out how to take apart a defense.
Yeah, kid, you know, I'm going to talk about one thing real quick. I'm going to take a break from football and talk about Lamar Odom. I mean, I watched this guy play from college when I was still in school. I think he played for Rhode Island or somebody and, you know, came up and reality TV guy and a player that never really, I think, showed his full potential. You know, fighting for his life tonight, drugs, a combination of cocaine and sexual enhancers. And we know he had a drug problem. You know, he's on the reality show with the Kardashians when he dated Khloe and married Khloe. And his life's been a total tailspin. And drug use among athletes, it's a sad story because the guy was a pretty good player. And you're seeing more and more of these guys. I mean, just they miss the limelight so much. And you know, some of these guys, you know, like I said a year ago, a lot of these guys lose their money in the NBA and the NFL. They spend it, and then after the bright lights are gone, they don't know what to do. And a lot of these guys don't do well. Brett Favre years ago had a pill problem. You have a bunch of these pro athletes who are just, you know, not knowing how to continue life after the bright lights go out. And you look at Michael Jordan, he's doing very well, but a lot of the time you see these athletes they did a special years ago on HBO, and some of these guys were homeless. They were drug addicts. What do you think people have to do or not do anything because they're rich guys? Do you feel that some guys cannot handle life or the second chapter of their life after being a pro athlete? Because you hear these stories too many times.
Yeah, it is really upsetting to hear a story like that with someone that was so gifted as Lamar Odom, but I think that's where things like ESPN come into play because they give jobs to former players, former coaches, former head office people that step away and retire, and they get to still be somewhat connected with the thing that they love doing. And it's hard, and Lewis has talked about this when he came on to, I think it's like after Monday Night Football, that crew that goes on, recaps the game, but he talked about how it's just better for him and keeps his mind on football because he loves the game so much. And it's hard when you're away from that. But Lamar Odom probably fell into the right place. I didn't follow him like you did back in college, but he probably found the right place with Phil Jackson as a head coach and, you know, kind of kept as like a father figure to him because he was an exceptional player. I mean, one of the best six men that he had. He was 7 foot that can shoot a three very accurately, and he was just one of those very physical big men that you always wanted, and it's the reason that the Lakers won so many championships in the late 2000s, and it is hard to hear because I did, that's when I started watching basketball a lot, so I knew of him, and I knew how he was so great, and it's kind of surreal hearing about what he's going through just right now.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough because he was such a good player, and his life is with a tailspin. And, you know, I've been saying this for a long time. I said, you know, when you have all this money, some guys just don't know how to filter it. I don't know why they go to drugs, but they have the money to get the drugs. And they're not getting the drugs down, you know, on the corner like Joe Blow. They're getting the high-end drugs and, you know, they're paying top dollar for it, and these guys get addicted. I mean, you got Whitney Houston. You can go down the line, and there's here athletes and just actors also, people who live this lifestyle that's going to drugs, and you got normal guys like us who won't touch it. And we don't touch it because we that's not how we are. But, you know, I always try to put myself in these athletes' shoes and say, wow, these guys were revered their whole lives, and it has to come to an end. And some guys don't prepare for that. And I think when you look at the stats, there are the stat African-American athletes, football and basketball, I think it was 65 to 70% after their careers are broke. And some of them go back to where they came from. Let's be honest, when these college coaches want these athletes, they're not always going to prep schools. They're going to the hood where these kids are trying to get out. And some guys just revert back to that, unfortunately, after the fact. And, you know, I just feel bad saying that. But, you know, let's be honest, kid. When you watch these African-American athletes who are so gifted and so rich and people are looking up to them, white, black kids, Indian, doesn't matter. These guys, the first thing they want to do is, you know, buy a big car, buy a big mansion, buy gold, get gold teeth. And I shake my head and I look at Eli Manning, Peyton Manning. I look at Drew Brees and those guys, white guys. And I compare them and I say, they're not doing that. But the culture where these African-American players come from, you kind of sometimes, and it's not all of them, but for the majority of them, they fall back to where they came from. So they never really progressed. They just progressed. Just, you know, their bad side was on pause for a while. And then as soon as it's over, if they have nothing else planned in their life, they seem to go right back there. And I feel bad for Lamar Odom. I hope he makes it, but, you know, that's a tough thing. But as far as the athletes, you know, kid, I've been saying this for years. We had some roundtable discussions with some pretty good reporters in West New York, and I've been saying that for years. You can criticize the NCAA to an extent, I feel, because let's be honest, when Nick Saban wants a good quarterback or a good defensive end or linebacker, he's not going to Beverly Hills. They're looking at these kids in the impoverished city areas. They'll go there, and most of these kids, let's be honest, you put them in front of a mic, half of them can't speak. You question how they got through college, and then they're athletes. But then once it's over, they're thrown out like trash. So what do you expect them to do? So, you know, can you elaborate on what I just said? And, look, it's just fact. People don't like to hear it. But it's just fact. I've seen it. I'm a scout. I see how people go out there and get these kids. Sometimes I'll step in and protect the kids the best I can. But guess what? Some of the parents want to get out, and they'll get out in any means necessary. If it's through their kid, the parents aren't hoping to get education. They're hoping they make it to the NFL NBA, which is ridiculous. But that's how parents think.
It's set for these kids that are coming out of high school at a high level are a little ridiculous. And what happens is that, I don't know about most cases, but what my assumption would be that is they grow up glamorizing all these big things that all their favorite hip-hop stars or athletes already have that have made it, and they glamorize that. And then once they get that taste of that fame or that opportunity to maybe purchase one of those extravagant cars or buy a big house, that they take that opportunity without even thinking, because that's just – what they've always been praising and what they've always strived for. And I don't know if it's like a motivation factor for them when they're playing the game, if they want to get to that point where they can afford all that stuff, but they just get to that point and then they end up just binge spending the money and not really taking time. And you can look at all the people that you mentioned before with Drew Brees and Peyton Manning. They didn't grow up in the hood and on the streets. And I'm guessing that the reason they have better control of their money and spending-wise is because of just their glamoring kind of like stability instead of
right.
These things that kids have been – I mean, you look at kids now, they're always buying the Ferraris, the Lamborghinis, and all these new Bugattis and things. And once they get the opportunity, they're going to take it because that's what they've always wanted and it's something that resonates with them and like their inner child when they were growing up.
Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, I look at athletes all the time, and, you know, I can recall when I watched Travis Henry, and he's in prison right now, and I watched him, and they put a microphone in front of him, and I just said, why? And everyone was laughing. I never forget, we're at a party, and we're listening to him talk, and I wasn't laughing. I was thinking to myself, who pushed him through school? How did he get through college? Who didn't teach him how to speak in front of a camera? That's why I interview these kids on my show. I want them to be able to speak. And there's kids I turned down. I had a kid on once. I'm talking to him on the phone. He's talking to me like I'm in a corner with him. I didn't put him on. Why? It probably would have hurt him, too. You know, I just didn't feel like he even deserved it. He's a great athlete out of Florida. He's at Florida State now. And my whole thing was, I want to see this kid in 5 years, or if he doesn't make it to the NFL, let's see what happens. And unfortunately, you know, this is the way it is, you know, and I'm guilty of it. We're all guilty of it. We don't care most of the time unless they're helping our team win. And Pac-Man Jones, you can go down the list. And the NFL is the biggest bunch of hypocrites because they know this, kid. Coming out of college, they knew Pac-Man Jones was a jerk at West Virginia. They still brung him in, paid him a ton of money, and he was a mess in the NFL. And he's okay now. He's under wraps because I think he knows he's getting older, and this ain't going to be around much longer. But the NFL, I think, is the biggest proponent of letting these guys in. Hey, if you're a good athlete, that's fine. How are you socially? NFL doesn't look at that, and then they want to put up this stuff and say, okay, you know, they want to suspend guys. They want to do this and do that. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. What about the NCAA? What about the teams who want to win? Look, the NCAA is a billion-dollar industry. People don't realize that. Those athletes bring in so much money for the organizations, and they're going to get whoever they can. If he's from the hood and has a very low GPA, let me tell you something right now, kid. That whole GPA thing is a bunch of crap because if a kid's a phenom and he has a ninth grade level reading and he's a senior, they will find a way to get him in college and have him playing to help them earn money. So what do you think the NCAA should do? Because let's be honest, kid, we're basketball fans. We know darn well maybe of that team, maybe four of those guys are straight-up thugs, but they're on the NBA team. We like them because they could play, but then you're not too surprised when you hear down the road, you know, resisting arrest, hanging out with this guy, drugs. It doesn't come to a shock to me because I'm kind of numb to it, but can you kind of see what I'm saying, and have you found yourself kind of blocking that part out and just watching them perform for your team?
Yeah, I feel like that is a valid point, and I never really thought about that with, like, you always want them to just do good for your team, and you want them to be on your team because they perform well on your team, and you don't really think about the kind of education you're getting. But for basketball in the NCAA, I think, and I've always fought for this, that they should have something like football where these kids just don't go one and done every year because of the financial gain that they get. I feel like education is way more important, and obviously the NCAA is just going to keep rebuilding and rebuilding and rebuilding and then just keep on raking in the money because of how quickly these stars turn over and then they get sent to the NBA. Some of them don't even make it. I mean, some of the players that are on national basketball teams don't make it in the NBA. I can only remember, like, Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist from the team, the UK team that went basically undefeated except for the SEC tournament. And then you got the UConn team. I mean, Shabazz Napier was just traded this last offseason. Yep. He was supposed to be the cornerstone of that UConn team that won the NCAA title 2 years ago. So it's just one of those things that they just keep pushing out these stars that might not make it in the NBA, and then what do they have to fall back on? And it's just unfortunate because they don't have much to fall back on because they weren't taught properly because they were just pushed through school to get to their athletic programs and to hopefully make it to the NBA and make their living that way.
Kid, that's a great point. I'm glad you bring that up because a lot of these NCAA guys that you hear about, 90% of fans don't follow where they go if they don't make it. You have all these kids, one and dones. A large part don't make it at all. They end up overseas. They end up in the I don't know if they can go to the D-League. Some go to the D-League, but some don't make it. So now, instead of helping this kid by protecting him from himself, by wanting to skip the education and go right to college for the money, I blame the coaches who recruit these guys, knowing them. I mean, look, I love college basketball. Patino's a great coach. You have a lot of good, great coaches out there. But if you know a kid's one and done, that's kind of dirty when you think about it and just break it down. it's kind of dirty that the NCAA allows that. Look at some of the best players, except for LeBron James, except for Kobe Bryant. LeBron was a special case. I mean, if he would have went to Duke, as he was cool with Mike Krzyzewski, if he'd have went to Duke 2 years, Duke would have won those 2 years. You know what I'm saying? Period. And
yeah,
you have kids who see that and think, oh, I'm going to be the next LeBron. You have YouTube, who's you could pull up YouTube right now, and people are putting these kids on, and they're not just ready. And people get mad at me when I say, guess what? Spain's going to beat us one day. Oh, no, they're not. I said, listen, it's going to be one of them European teams when we have our all-stars, and I'll tell you why, and our good all-stars, because those guys, you don't like how they play, but if you watch FIFA, when the basketball world tournament comes up, or the Olympics, they're so fundamental. Our guys are just good. Our stars are just better. But if you watch them play, how does Spain stick close to us? Because they're fundamental. They got seven footers shooting the three-point. They're just so more fun. I mean, they're so much more fundamental than us. And I think this dominance of our basketball is going to start eroding away if we don't start teaching these guys fundamentals by stopping this one-and-done crap. Because let's be honest. John Wall, I think, was one of the best one-and-done guys I've ever seen because he's a special player. But not everyone's John Wall. You have guys who could use 2 or 3 years. Look at Tim Duncan. He stayed all 4 years. All 4 years, and look at him. He's a Hall of Famer. One of the most fundamental players in the NBA still. But this one and done, I'm sorry. A large part of these kids who are one and done get drafted in the NBA for their athleticism. You never hear about fundamentals ever, ever. So they go through their whole career playing street ball. And I think the NBA, to me, there are some guys who are fundamental, but it's all a big street ball game. Let's be honest. I mean, you have some guys who just do things really well. Curry comes to my mind. Great shooter. Undersized, but a great shooter, and he does so much with the basketball. He's so fundamental. But you can't say that about 80% of the NBA.
Yeah, the other name I was going to throw out there is probably Anthony Davis or Kyrie Irving. Those are like the only other two that I can think of that are right now one and done that have proven to be all-stars in the NBA. And there are a lot more than that. And people, like you said, people don't follow that. People follow them if they don't make it. So it's one of those skewed results that people go, oh, well, the one-and-dones do succeed in the NBA because there is Anthony Davis, there is John Wall, there is Kyrie Irving. But I feel like LeBron just opened up these floodgates that, oh, the one-and-dones or the high school kids can make it and be the all-stars. But there are so many more one-and-dones than people actually know about, and it's unfortunate that people don't, because then their education suffers, and the NCAA won't put a stop to this until enough people are fed up with this, and it won't get that way until people are more educated about it.
Yeah. You just got an email from Tom from Florida. Tom normally writes in or calls in once in a while. He wants to know, when will we see the – I can't believe you're saying this, but it's a good point. I wasn't thinking about it. When are we going to see the great white player as you've seen back in the old days, like the Larry Bird? He said there's never been an American white player like Bird since Bird. And my question to that's going to be this. I think he's out there, but the coaches in the NBA, they don't want that guy. They want the flashy guy, and I think that's why. I mean, that's just my opinion. I think there's a lot of good white basketball players, a lot of them. But the way the NBA is, it's a black-dominated league, and it's now – you're getting more Europeans. And he just hit me back and said, we'd rather get white Europeans than white Americans. Hey, I'm with you 100%, Tom, but I think that's the way the NBA is. I've been saying that for a long time. If there's any group in basketball or even football at times for certain positions who should be, you know, upset, I felt it's always been white players because, look, there are some good ones out there. The problem is the NBA gets that street baller. The NCAA gets that street baller. And you'll see white Americans in basketball slowly trickle in. Slowly trickle in. If they're fundamental, they're not cool, though. And that's a big mistake. They're not cool. How about the guy from Wisconsin? I'll be honest. I think he was good in college. I don't know what he's going to do in the NBA.
Yeah, the seven-footer, I forgot his name.
I forgot his name, too. But I know, you know,
Frank
played for Wisconsin.
Kaminsky.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like he's going to be another one of those Doug McDermott guys. And
oh, yeah.
Doug McDermott was a scoring machine at Creighton. And he comes in, he plays for Chicago. And maybe people who only follow Chicago know what he's doing, because every time I watch the NBA and watch Chicago, he's not a big factor in the game. So,
no.
But, I mean, you're seeing more and more people try. There's Kelly Olynyk on Boston, but
yep.
I don't, to your point, I don't really see that next white American basketball all-star. The last one I knew of was... I would have to say it's a little both sides that not many people – I feel like the stereotypes of maybe deter people, white American basketball players, to keep striving for it because there are good ones. Don't strive for it because maybe that stereotype is already out there. And then to the point that you said that the NBA just kind of wants the flashy street ball kids. But I think it's – I think you have to take both sides in consideration when it comes to that topic.
Yeah, I mean, look, kid, you know, you're starting to learn. We hit on all topics, and, you know, I got a few more emails here. But, you know, they said, what about the white running back? And let's be honest. I mean, these are great points because my favorite guy in college, oh, don't even forget his name. Oh, my gosh. He played for Stanford, the running back. He's at Minnesota. Oh, Hubbard. Oh, my gosh. Can't believe you slipped my mind. Allstedt was a big I loved Allstedt. But, yeah, look, that's a great point because let me tell you something. In high school, you'll have a ton of white running backs. In college, they disappear. They almost disappear. And I'm like, where'd they go? And we had this debate at least twice a year. And I will say this, and I'll keep saying it. African Americans are good athletes, but so are whites. And I think they get discriminated against sometimes when they get to the NCAA in football or basketball, and then especially when they get to the pros. They almost have to be exceptional. And I think that's nuts because I think if any group of players have a right to complain, I say it's them. I mean, Kate, it's them. Because, look, what's the last great white running back you've seen or even the pros going after a guy? It's not fair, but then it comes down to competition. And I see it this way. Most of those guys are coming in, decent family, will not give you any trouble, work hard, and play good enough to make it. But just so happened, when you see him in high school, you're like, yeah, he's going to a school. School picks him up, it's over. You kind of lose guys in the mix, and it's something that people don't like to talk about, but it's a fact. There's a fact that mostly the receivers, most of the running backs are black. There's a fact that most of the quarterbacks still – I mean, the black quarterback was introduced as a running quarterback, they do label him. And when it comes down to it, let's be honest. If a black guy's making a football team who really knows football, he's picking a white guy. He's not picking a black guy because he knows he can't throw. And those kind of caveats are in sports, kid, and nobody wants to talk about them. And I think it's kind of racist. It's racist to me. Unfairly against the white athlete who has to prove so much more as a running back, a receiver, as a point guard, as a center, as a small forward than any other sport. And I think it's wrong. And I think the NCAA, I think the NBA, and I think the NFL hides it very well. But to those who really look at it, why is it that way? It's tough, kid, when you think about it. It's a very tough subject, but what do you think it is? I mean, I have no answer to it. I know it's out there. And if I'm a white running back and I'm good in high school and I get recruited to a college, guess what? If I get a scholarship to go to Florida, I might as well not even take it unless I'm phenomenal because guess what? They probably got six black guys from Florida or somewhere else who they're probably looking for anyway. So do I really have a chance? You know what I'm saying? So yeah, what do you think about that, kid? When I put it out there like that, you probably never looked at it, but think about it. Why is it that way? It just doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, that's what I touched upon before, that like stereotype in their head that maybe deters them from striving for that because they just have that mindset like, oh, I'm not going to be picked because they're probably looking for other African-American running backs and black running backs. And
but it's not right.
Other... Yeah, it isn't right. And it's good, but I just feel like it's already too deep and it's going to take way too long to change. I can only think of a couple. I mean, on one hand, I can count the amount of great running backs that I know in the NFL right now. And one of them is Danny Woodhead. The other one was Toby Gerhard. But other than that,
Toby Gerhard, there he is. Yep.
Yeah, I don't really know any other ones.
Yeah, but it's not. But listen, you see a bunch in high school though who are good. That's what I'm trying to say. I see a bunch of good white running backs. They get to college, unless they're, let's say, at Dartmouth, Harvard, small D1AAs, D3s. You see them, but at the highest level, you don't. And I think it's wrong. And I think, you know, it's also a stereotype that's bad for the black guy, because most white guys think every black guy's a good athlete, which isn't true at all. And it's sad that an African-American kid, when he's 8 years old, he's not thinking about being a cop, being a doctor, being a lawyer, or being anything else that requires him to think. He's thinking about being an athlete, which is very hard to make in the pros. But that's all they're thinking about. And I think when you look at that caveat, listen, kid, if you had 10 kids, and now this may change now, because before you had just the black guys, pants sagging, now you got white guys doing that. So it's this culture that is so mixed up now, because I think sports is a reflection of our culture, and the only time you see a white point guard is when you watch the WNBA or in college. That's the only time you see him. But as men, you don't see it, and I've been advocating this for a long time, and I even called the NCAA 2 years ago. I wanted to get somebody on about that. Nobody wanted to come on, because guess what? I came to the conclusion, kid, it's all about money. It's all about flash. You just keep that pipeline open, get these guys in, let them make your university money, and wherever they go, it's not your problem anymore, because you have more coming in.
Yeah, that's a perfect point, and people don't think of the other way. If a black kid is not an athlete, then it's like frowned upon, and I mean, in his peer group, probably. That's as unfortunate as comes, because kids shouldn't be put into stereotypes that young and put into that kind of pressure. But to touch on the fact of the whole white point guard thing, and that's the, you look at Jeremy Lin as an example. Granted, you know his story and where he came from and how he was cut from multiple teams, but that happens with all these guys. But I feel like it was just such a big point because he was not a black point guard and started in the NBA and was making noise, because you have these people that get cut from teams. You have James Harrison as a linebacker in the NFL. He gets cut from the Steelers twice before he finally makes the team, and then he's an all-pro linebacker. It just happens all the time. But I feel like Jeremy Lin's story, granted it was a great story, but I feel like it was kind of like blown out of proportion, because he was the first of his kind with Asian American point guard that started an NBA team, let alone the New York Knicks, who is probably one of the most well-known franchises in any sport.
Yeah. And I tell you what, I was making jokes. I said, my goodness, he sure stole money from Houston, though. I mean, you had to give it to him. In that short amount of time, he made a lot of money. And I tell you, I mean, I thought he was pretty good. I thought he wasn't. Me personally, you know, we look at the NBA, Jeremy Lin's a great point, because I didn't think he was a starter. I thought he was a guy that can come in. I mean, look, he has a good game, but people caught on to him real quick. And I felt bad for him a little bit, but then I think about it, Houston paid him, I thought, way too much money. And when they did, I said, okay, you better perform. He did okay, but what do you think? I mean, you think it was undeserved? I mean, let's be honest, he didn't deserve that contract, but then I thought about it, I said, you know what? He's a shot. He's out there playing, and if Houston wants to give him all this money, take it. I would take it. But I don't think when you think of basketball, he's a guy that could play in the NBA. He's an NBA guy, but is he a starter? Is he an impact player? I don't know, because there's been games he's been looking that he used to look good in, but then it's kind of like getting pushed back. So when you think about the Jeremy Lin story, we all were wrapped up in it, but what do you think happened to him?
Do I think his money was deserved? I think it was, because I feel like the hype just rode him to that fame, and I felt like Houston probably made a lot of money just by bringing him in that year.
Yeah.
Now, granted, if you talk about his production on the court, I don't think it was deserved, but from a business standpoint, I think it was deserved because of the hype that came with Jeremy Lin to Houston. Now, I've always seen him as a bench player. I don't think he's a starter because of his lack of defensive ability and his kind of like he misjudges when he's playing defense. And But he was an offensive juggernaut at New York, and people really liked that. But he worked well. He flourished when Carmelo Anthony was not on the floor, and the New York Knicks were not a strong team without Carmelo Anthony until Jeremy Lin came around, because I feel like Jeremy Lin thrives with those second-teamers, which is kind of unfortunate that he got put into that situation in Houston and put on that pressure in Houston. But he kind of seceded back into L.A., which is a big market, and it's hard to do it there. Expectations weren't as big because of the knowledge of the team that was around him. So skill-wise and production-wise, I don't think that Jeremy Lin should have gotten paid that contract, but I can almost guarantee you that it probably brought as many, if not more, dollars into the Houston Rockets pockets than they paid out for him.
Yeah, you know, kid, I knew this was coming. What do you think about Green and Curry ripping teams for criticizing the Warriors' title? What was said, Tuesday, there was a conference about the Warriors. Did they deserve the title? And the reference from Coach Doc Rivers was pretty pointed and pretty much said they didn't deserve it. Doc Rivers saying that, you know, you need luck in the West. Look at Golden State. They didn't have to play us or the Spurs. Ouch. That hurts. And you knew it was coming because a lot of people were saying they got lucky. They didn't deserve it. You know, if the Cavs were healthy, they wouldn't have won. That's kind of dirty for a coach to say that. But I think Doc Rivers needs to worry about his Clippers because, I mean, let's be honest, you can't blame Golden State. They beat who they had to beat. And, yes, when you look at how they won, you could see him saying that. Let's be honest. If the Cavs were fully healthy, I don't know if they win that game. Maybe they still do. I think it's a more, I can't say compelling because it was compelling games. I mean, LeBron carried that team as far as he can carry him, and they were shorthanded and stuck with him. I mean, am I saying Doc Rivers shouldn't have said it? No, but he has a point and he doesn't have a point, but you can't blame the Golden State Warriors for winning the title. But I will say this year, I don't think they get there. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be the defending champs. I just think the West is too tough. But if people want to go small ball, and if they're hitting on all cylinders, I don't care who you are, they're going to beat you. But a team like the Spurs, that's going to be a tough one this year, I think, for Golden State in the playoffs. I think if they would have faced the Spurs last year, would they have won? Man, I don't know, man. I mean, their style of playing, I mean, they just don't have enough size for me. I was shocked when they won it. But I realize they shoot so well. They were a great shooting team last year. But I just don't see Green going up against, like, guys with a true inside presence. I mean, come on. I just don't think they would have beat the Spurs. And that's a great point. Golden State, yeah. For some reason, Golden State beats the Clippers, I think, in my book. I mean, look, I'm no fan of DeAndre Jordan. I think he's a – people tell me he's a great center. I think he's a – I'm not going to say great center because people tell me Howard's a great center, and Dwight Howard to me is not a great center. I think he has not lived up to his full potential, and I think he's become almost clownish in the NBA. But maybe I'm wrong there. What do you think about what Doc Rivers said? I think it has some merit, but Golden State was hot.
Yeah, I don't really agree with what he said, but you got to look at where he's coming from because Doc Rivers – and his Clippers have faced Golden State the last 2 years, and both series went to seven games, and they felt like the Spurs may have been a better team than the Warriors were, but the Warriors can't pick who they play. They can't choose if they want to play the Spurs, the Clippers, the Grizzlies. They can't choose them, even though they ended up playing the Grizzlies, and the Grizzlies played them tough. So, I mean, they showed that they can match up with the bigger teams, but it just comes down to whether or not if they – I just think the Spurs are too experienced for the Golden State Warriors. I would love to see that series, but I think the most exciting series was that first round with the Spurs and the Clippers because of how entertaining each and every game was because of how well they matched up against each other. And to your point about DeAndre Jordan, I think he's a great center, and I'll argue with you until nightfall because – I feel like to be a great center, you have to have that great presence down low. The only fault in his game that I've ever seen is that free throw shooting, but it's really skewed because of how many shots he takes. And
yeah,
it's unfair to justify that maybe a little bit because of he's taking what Houston did to him and what San Antonio did to him. He progressed as the year went on, but it's still not where it should be as a NBA basketball player, because people blame the excuses of having big hands, but anybody can go outside and practice how to shoot. I used to be so bad at shooting, and I can make free throws now because of technique and just learning. You see the technique from DeAndre Jordan and him trying to learn, I feel like he's striving to be great. Maybe he's not there yet. I still think he is, but maybe people won't give him the credit for it because of that, I guess, Achilles heel that he has. But I still feel like the way that the NBA is run today, that center is not really the most important position for scoring, and it's more catered toward the defensive side, and that's where Jordan excels probably better than anybody in the league.
Yeah, you know what? Defensively, I give it to him. I just, you know, look, I love the dunks. I mean, his one dunk was all-time crazy. But, you know, I'm looking at centers. I'm thinking, if you look at the league now, okay, I'll give that to you. He may be the best because there's not really real centers anymore. You know, it's a point guard league. It's a power forward league. It's just a different league now. But when you look at a guy like Dwight Howard, I mean, come on. I mean, this guy was a beast, and I don't know what happened to him. I thought, me personally, maybe I'm wrong for saying this, I thought he let Houston down last year in the playoffs. I expected so much more. He had some sparks here and there. You know, he had some flashes, but to me, he just didn't do what he should have done. And I think right now, I mean, I don't know. Maybe when Kobe ripped him when he came to the Lakers, maybe that affected him, but I mean, I look at it and say, you know, I want to see more from him because I think he could do so much more. I think he's almost unstoppable down low. But he's become stoppable down low. I don't know if it's because of him or the defenses, but there's no reason he's not a 25. I'll give him 20, a 2012 guy almost every night. I just can't fathom why he's not. Why do you think he isn't that guy? Look, he's a good center. He does have big games where he scores 30+, but it's not all the time. It's inconsistent.
Yeah, I can justify that in my own opinion to say that it's one of those cases where that talent that doesn't work hard will always lose to all right talent that works hard. Because I just feel like, and I think it goes back to before the whole LA thing. I think it comes back to that press conference when Dwight Howard was kind of dodging questions on whether or not he would return to Orlando. And then, like, I think it was like the next week he signs his one-year tender with them and stays there. And then the whole falling out thing with Stan Van Gundy. And then just him coming in, I don't know if he got that like kind of mentality of that he can go wherever he wants. And the Lakers wanted him and they were going to be that he was going to be the Shaq replacement and he was just going to be this great all-time all-star and probably the best player in the NBA. And that just kind of got to him because he does have that talent, but it just feels like sometimes he just takes tonight off. And I hate saying that about athletes because that's their living. But when you see the effort from him versus the effort from some of these other guys like Draymond Green or those guys that are always running up and down the court, it just seems like sometimes he just, if he doesn't get a call, he'll do that face and just like jog back down the court to play on defense where they need him. And it's unfortunate. And like you said, I think that the NBA is gearing more towards small ball with people like LeBron playing power forward and then point guard and everywhere around the court. So you can't really match up a center anymore in the NBA unless you're playing those Western Conference powerhouses like the Grizzlies, like the Clippers and all those teams. But Dwight Howard is just, if he were to get that effort in and if I were to see more effort out of him, then I think that he would be unstoppable, like you said, down low, because you saw it against the late games against the Clippers and the early games against Golden State. He bodies people and there's no stopping him, but it is really intriguing on why that isn't every night and why he doesn't produce like that every night. Cause when it comes down to it, he is probably the most gifted center that is in the NBA right now, maybe on the face of this earth.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you're right. You know, I see a quick email. What do we think about the best guard? I hate to say this, but, you know, I'm not a Cleveland guy, but I'm a basketball player guy. I think Irving's the best, me personally. I think he's, even with Curry doing what he did, I think, you know, if I'm picking a team, I'm picking Ewing. I'm sorry. I mean, I just think he's, I think he's phenomenal. I mean, I think he's great. And when you match him up with Curry, as good as Curry is, I'm still picking him. I mean, am I wrong there? I mean, that's just my guy, and I'm not a Cleveland guy at all, but, I mean, when he's healthy, he's on. I mean, he's an all-around good player, and people will tell me Curry, they'll say DeRozan, they'll say this. I'm like, what? You know, what are you talking about? And then we'll get into big arguments about it, but Kyrie Irving's my guy. Am I wrong there? Top three at least? Top two. I mean, you probably have a guy that you like better than him, but I think he's, to me, he's the top guy. That's his name.
Yeah, even with his drop-off, I'm going to have to say it's either going to be Rajon Rondo, because I still think he's one of the best all-around point guards in the league, and then Russell Westbrook, because that guy plays with so much energy and so much ferocity on both sides of the ball, and it just, I mean, he's a stat packer, you can call him that, but when it comes down to it, he produces, and if he were maybe to have more help in OKC last year, he probably could have taken them deep. I'm not saying that maybe Durant needed to be there, but maybe if they had that other second guy, maybe if they had that Harden, but I think Irving would be the top three. Skill-wise, I would put Rondo in there, but not now in how well he's performed. I'd probably have to go with the Westbrook, Irving.
That's not a bad choice, you know, but I just like Irving. You know, Westbrook, I'm telling you right now, speaking of Westbrook, real quick, I'm going to hit you with the Thunder. After this year, I'll be shocked if Durant doesn't go back to D.C. and team up with Wall. I think it only makes sense. I think the Thunder probably would like that, even though they probably don't want to do it. Financially, it's the best thing they could do. What do you think about Durant? Look, I think all big men, when they start having issues with their feet, their ankles, or their knees, they're pretty much done. I hate to say this because I know he's got some basketball left, but the body starts breaking down a lot quicker. He's not a big guy. He's a very thin guy. I've been surprised that he hasn't suffered serious injuries sometime because he's so thin. He's a great player, but I think when you look at it, are you going to put your saddle on Westbrook? Probably. I just think that the Thunder has to make this move, and I think Durant sees the writing on the wall that Westbrook, they have to make a tough choice, and Westbrook's their guy. The problem with Westbrook is he's so intense. And I don't know how many other guys that can help him are going to want to play with him. There's been discussion of those two going at it back when they were hitting the finals and all that. I mean, those two got in some serious arguments. Who's the guy? And good luck finding a guy to fill in that's going to want to play with him. I've read some stories about him. He's a good guy, I'm sure. But on that basketball court, let's be honest, each guy, I seen one game where both of them had like 30 shots. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's crazy. So what do you think about Durant leaving, and what do you think about the Thunder finding that guy to play with him?
To the point of Durant leaving, I think it has to come down to what happens this next season with both Washington and the Lakers. I think it's between those two teams. If he goes anywhere else, I'm going to be shocked. But if he stays in OKC, I'm going to be shocked just as much, because I feel like those are his two landing spots, either – kind of heir apparent to the throne of Kobe, like Dwight Howard was supposed to be in L.A., or just going back home to D.C. Now, if L.A. can probably pick up some wins, maybe make the playoffs this year with all their new additions with Hibbert, and then we have Randall coming back and all those guys. But if Washington becomes the Eastern powerhouse, even with LeBron being with the Cavs and Kyrie and the Cavs and all them, and you see Washington emerge as the favorite out of the East, then I feel like it would be a no-brainer for Kevin Durant to just pack up his bags from OKC and head over to Washington. But to the point of Russell Westbrook, that's what I was getting at earlier, he just plays with so much emotion that I feel like no one can really gel with him, and I feel like that was the same way with Rajon Rondo, that he just plays with so much emotion that you heard about things with, like, Rajon Rondo and Ray Allen not getting along, and they used to have, like, moments where they wouldn't even speak to each other before a finals game because they were just so different of people, that Ray Allen was more of the generous type and Rhonda was more of like the self-contained kind of guy, and they just didn't gel well, but they won a title and they went back in 2010. But I just feel like those type of players need the kind of structure, and I don't know if Billy Donovan's going to provide it this year, but hopefully he can, to need that structure at coaching to try to keep his emotions in check like Doc Rivers did with Rajon Rondo and all those kind of like ego-minded players that they had on that Boston team back in the late 2000s.
All right, Caleb, we got about 6 more minutes. I want to ask you about one team in the East that is going to make the playoffs that I feel is just too soft at times, but I like their players, but I just don't see them getting over the hump. It's the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, the Atlanta Hawks. Wow, I'm thinking football. The Atlanta Hawks. What do you think about them? I don't think – I'm telling you, I think they're not a soft team, but they're not a team that I think is going to win the Eastern Conference at all. I think they'll always be competitive. I think they'll be right there. What is it with them? And the way they lost it last year bothered me because I thought they had a shot. What do you think about the Hawks? I mean, everyone forgets about them. Last year was a great year for them. Do they have enough to ever win a title with this current team?
I don't think they have it talent-wise. Fundamentally, I think they're one of the best teams in the league, and that comes from the Popovich tree. And I feel like that kind of what the Hawks are going for identity-wise. They're going for that, like, Spurs feel, but they don't have Tim Duncan, and that's the beginning and the end of it. That's the difference between them and the Spurs, and that's the difference between where they want to go and where they're going to end up going, because I just feel like that there isn't that strong middle presence to continuously threaten opponents and play good enough defense on a team. Now, that team is one of the most unselfish teams, and they move the ball with the best of them, and they can score from anywhere, but when it comes down to it, they don't have that big man. I mean, you can say Al Horford is, but Al Horford is one of those like kind of skinny big guys who isn't 7 foot. I think he's 6'10", and he plays center, so it's one of those guys that are going to get dominated by a DeAndre Jordan or Dwight Howard, and it's just unfortunate, but to that point, that's where I feel like the Hawks are going, and I just feel like they're kind of like the middle-of-the-road team that just needs that one big guy. If they were to get someone like LaMarcus Aldridge, I would have said that would have been different, but they just ended up not making many moves and keeping their solid core. They lost Carroll, but, I mean, that I still think that team's going to be around where they were last year, maybe not as good, but they're going to be around there because of how well they are fundamentally top to bottom. They
all
play
right,
10 deep. So.
Yeah, kid, you're right. But last 3 minutes, this is the story I've been saying since last year. The Chicago Bulls, how much longer do they take Derrick Rose's hand and just keep him in the team? I know he's your franchise, but Butler, to me, has legitimized himself. He's not a Rose, but when it comes playoff time, if you don't recall, they were going to Butler a lot, and now Rose was hurt again. He may miss the opener. How much longer does Chicago stick with Rose? Even though that's your guy, he's had so many injuries, you never know where it's coming. Now he had an overbone injury. He may not be ready for the season opener. What do you think about this? And with Butler emerging, does a tough decision have to be made soon? Because Chicago got to start rebuilding that team. I like the team, but they're falling short. And Rose, I think, I'm not saying he's standing in their way, but I don't know, man. I mean, I pull for the guy every year. He ends up hurt. I'm looking at it from a business standpoint. How much longer do you stay with Rose?
I feel bad for him, too, but I think the days are numbered for him, and I think the biggest sign was the Tom Thibodeau letting go at the end of the year, and it's just showing a different kind of culture that's coming towards Chicago and the way they're building their team. Now, I do agree that I feel like Rose does hold them back because they rely so much on it, and they just really need to announce it as Jimmy Butler's team moving forward because he's the young and upcoming. I mean, he's sort of young, but he's the upcoming star that is going to make all-star after all-star after all-star game. But they need to start getting help for Jimmy Butler and just kind of move on from Rose. I think it's going to be best for both situations. I think it's just going to get him out of that atmosphere where people are just going to be constantly disappointed if he keeps getting hurt or what have you. But when it comes down to it, I think that one of these times, it wouldn't surprise me if he's gone by the trade deadline this year because of the way things are going in Chicago.
Where would he go, though? See, because I'm thinking, where does he fit? I mean, he would have to go to a team that has good players around him. He can't go to a team where he's asked to carry the load. I think this, a team like the Spurs, why not? I mean, let's be honest, he probably wouldn't be a starter, but it makes sense. He still could play, but you wouldn't have to demand from him every night going out there carrying the team, scoring 30 points. He's not that guy anymore. His body's not going to let him do it anymore. He may have one or two 30-point games, but in closing of the show, kid, where does he go? You know what I'm saying? Where? Where do you see him if that has happened?
I think he would have to go to some kind of on-the-brink team, some team that would need, like, just that extra one kind of push thing. I think he would need to go to somewhere like maybe Memphis or someone like that. But I think his pride would take too much of a hit, would be the leader of an offense. And I think it comes down to when – with the Spurs, I don't think he would gel where they're – I don't think he would take the benching – or well, not quote-unquote benching, but coming off the bench. And the other point I was going to make was that I forgot what I was going to say about the Derrick Rose and where else he could go, because I had another team that I had in mind that, but yeah, I don't think it would work out with the Spurs because of who he is as a person. He would try to kind of show what he still had left because of all these doubters and what they've said about him.
Well deserved though, but you know, yeah, that's going to be a story I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch Chicago real closely. About Rose, and I'm going to be watching a few teams. I'm going to watch the Spurs, and I'm going to watch the top teams. I'm going to be watching Atlanta. I'm going to be watching a ton of games this year. But I'm just looking at Rose. I know it's going to happen. When does Chicago put down the hammer? We got to wait and see. Will Aldridge work with the Spurs? We got to wait and see. Can Golden State repeat? We got to wait and see. What's going to happen with Durant coming back with the Thunder? We got to wait and see. There's a lot of good basketball. This season's shaping up to be nice, but we're going to talk about Tristan Thompson next time we're on and how much the Cleveland Cavaliers need him if they want to win a title. But, kid, thanks for coming on, man. We kind of went to football and talked to NBA. We're kind of getting warmed up for it because when the games start rolling, we got a bunch of guys coming in for roundtables. And good show today, man. Kid, any closing thoughts, man?
Just hope that EJ produces, gets a Bills win this weekend, and hopefully Bills fans don't overreact too much, but yeah, I'm excited about this NBA season, and it's great to start talking about basketball again because it is fast approaching. It's two Tuesdays from now, and I just can't wait till it opens and we can start talking basketball a lot because it's just as fun as football for me, watching it as a viewer and then analyzing as a reporter and trying to just discuss it. But yeah, thanks for having me on, and it's always
all right,
a pleasure.
Kid, and kid, sooner or later, man, you'll be having your own NBA show, so we got to get you warmed up here, man.
Yep, I can't wait.
All right, kid, thanks, man. That's the kid, Brandon, the kid, Friedman, who's on. And he's actually, look, guys, he's a host. He's a host now. You know, before you know it, you'll be responding to him when it comes to the NBA. We both talk NBA. You guys know I scout, and I'm pretty busy, so we're going to have this guy pretty much doing the NBA shows here. So, look, thank you all the fans for listening. Thanks to my sponsors. This is a good show. We kind of went football, we went in the NBA. For all you NBA guys, like I said, we're going to be having some serious NBA talk. We're going to have our guy William from down in Jersey. He's going to be joining us for the roundtable. We will catch you guys later. If you don't hear the show, if you did hear the show, want to pass on to a friend, please go ahead and just, you know, go on Facebook, Trenton White Sports, and just send it to your friend. Check it out. It's a good show. If you like basketball, it's a good basketball conversation. Talk about Lamar Odom. Talk about Durant. Talk about just everything, even the rise and somewhat fall of Jeremy Lin, of all names. Thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you guys later. We got some good shows planned for the NBA season. Just hang in there. We're ready to go. Thanks for listening, guys. Check you out later this week. You have G-Money coming on this week. And Slapshot Rob will be starting Sabres and NHL talk. We don't know the date yet for NHL talk, but Slapshot's a great hockey analyst. And for all you guys who love hockey, he's your guy. He'll be joined by G-Money once in a while. But Slapjack's going to be carrying hockey all season long. So we have a lot planned for you guys. And take care, and we'll catch you guys later on this week.